Hey there, welcome to the Creative Classroom Podcast. I'm your host, John Spencer. I'm a former middle school teacher, current college professor, and I am passionate about seeing teachers transform their classrooms into bastions of creativity and wonder. And so on this podcast, I share ideas and strategies, I interview experts, I tell stories about the things that work, but also those epic fails I've made along the way, and all because I believe that teachers play a profound role in helping students reach their creative potential. And so often we talk about what does it mean for students to be creative thinkers and problem solvers in a changing world. And before we get started with today's episode, I just want to share a couple of things if you don't follow me elsewhere. So I have a YouTube channel at spencervideos.com. And I have a blog slash set of resources, all kinds of free stuff that you can download, a newsletter that you can subscribe to, and that is at spencereducation.com. So I highly recommend subscribe to my YouTube channel. Also check out my blog, spencereducation.com. Sign up for my newsletter, and it's a great way to stay connected, check out free resources, and just learn more about these ideas of project-based learning and meaningful learning and student-centered learning in a changing world. And so without further ado, let's dive into this week's topic that's all about what it means to have focused, sustained work in a distracted world. It's no secret that students are distracted. When I conduct workshops and deliver keynotes, I see it. I hear about it all the time from teachers. I love to ask the question, what are your successes and what are your current challenges? And overwhelmingly, when we talk about challenges, teachers will talk about teaching to a distracted generation of students, a group of students who struggle with concentration, who struggle with longer sustained learning opportunities. And you know what? I see a similar pattern when I observe members of my cohort. I'm a full-time professor, and when I go into classrooms and I see them teaching, or when I volunteer at the K-12 level, especially at the secondary level, I see it. I notice it. I see it in the observations. But you know what? I've also experienced it firsthand in working with adults. I've seen it in some of the master's level courses that I do. And it's a common challenge in the higher ed level. It's a common challenge at the K-12 level. We are living in a distracted world. That is no secret to anyone. I'm speaking the obvious here, I'm sure. But I've also seen these examples, and I'm going to talk about some of them today, and I'm going to take a deeper dive later in upcoming weeks. But I've seen a lot of examples of where students are engaging in deep, sustained, meaningful, focused work. In a sea of distraction, I've seen these islands of focused work and deeper learning. I've witnessed innovative strategies that I've implemented in my own classroom practice, and that's what I want to talk about on this podcast. I want to focus on the solutions. This is why I'm starting a new series, and today's the introduction to the series, called The Concentration Code. I'm going to come up with a better name for it, but right now that's what it's called, Concentration Code. It's still a bit fuzzy in my head, but the main concept is how we can help students engage in that sustained focused learning in an age of distraction. I'll be sharing practical strategies based on research. I'll be talking about stories of teachers who have designed these amazing learning experiences that lead to this focused work. And ultimately, I want to strike a hopeful tone because I actually think that there are practical solutions to these challenges. But before we get there, I want to dive into where this is all coming from. And so the first thought I have is, how do we intentionally avoid distractions? So picture this. I'm sitting on the couch tapping away on my keyboard or my laptop. I mean, I guess it's not really a keyboard. It's just part of the laptop, so I don't know, whatever. I'm typing it in the keys, you know what they are. And I'm lost in this world of ideas. At times, the words flow easily as I tell stories and share insights, But other times I hit a roadblock and rework entire paragraphs. I move from frustration to excitement to a calm sense of enjoyment. My stomach rumbles and I glance at my phone. How can it possibly be past noon? Just 10 more minutes, I tell myself. Besides, I've got a 160-pound Great Dane whose head is resting on my lap, and I can't disrupt his slumber, so I continue. I eventually get stuck, and I mean truly stuck, and I can't help myself. Like, I'm trying to figure out what I'm trying to say, and it's just not making sense. I can't organize my thoughts in this moment, and I'm starting to get frustrated. In the moment, a little background is I'm working on this PBL book at the time, and I'm trying to figure out something, and I'm stumped. So I make a quick lunch, and I daydream. I work through my outline with no phone or television nearby, and even though I'm not working at the moment, I'm still in the zone. I empty the dishwasher and I go for a walk. And when I come back inside, the solution flashes through my mind and I return to my frantic typing. I later walk away and lift weights and I go for a run, and then I settle back down to another final 90 minutes of writing. And that's my day. The day flies by so fast that I barely notice when it is 3:30. I pick up my daughter from school, chill out with my kids, and then I head out at night to do an observation for a university faculty review process. Now, students arrive, and despite the stereotype of device addiction, they mostly just chat with one another. The professor introduces the movie Minority Report as the latest installment in a series about the history of film, AI, and social change. And to my surprise, this distracted generation, they're not distracted. They're riveted. They lean in to watch the movie. They keep their phones in their pockets. They laugh at the humor, gasp at the suspense, and remain focused on the film. When it ends, they engage in a deep Socratic seminar about the movie themes, the movie's themes, motifs, historical connections. I'm trying to think of other pieces. It is a broad Socratic seminar. Let's just put it that way. And I'm amazed by it. Again, no devices present whatsoever. As I drive home at night, I'm struck by the slower, deeper pace of this particular day. Now, true, I answered some emails, I attended a meeting, but the whole day seemed to counter what we often experience in a distracted world. What I've just had is a full day of sustained work. And so that's what I want to talk about. What do we mean by focused work? Well, both of these examples are different. One, if we think about it this way, you know, they point toward a similar idea of long-term slower work where we can focus on a key idea or project or learning in an extended period of time. But the mode looks really different. You know, in one case, I'm spending hours organizing my thoughts and writing an initial draft of a book. But in another moment, you know, it's a device-free, you know, three-hour block of watching a movie and engaging in a collaborative Socratic seminar in this shared experience. So again, the mode can look very different when you engage in focused work. Now, I would argue that this is very similar to what Cal Newport describes as deep work. And he describes it as when you delve into meaningful, sustained work that requires your full cognitive attention, so your mental attention. Newport argues that the constant interruptions of things like email, social media, those types of daily interactions reduce our attention while also increasing cognitive load. This ultimately reduces our ability to engage in deep work. And I want to point out again, it can be solitary, it can be collaborative, it can be group-oriented, it can be analytical, creative. There's a lot of ways to do deep work, but the key idea is sustained focus. Cal Newport describes deep work this way, where he says, it's the ability to engage in, quote, professional activities performed in a state of distraction-free concentration that pushes your cognitive capabilities to their limit. Newport contrasts this with shallow work, things that are non-demanding, easy to replicate, and often done in a distracted or interrupted state, like checking emails or attending brief meetings. When you engage in deep work, you're often hitting a state of flow. And I've written about this before. You can check out previous blog posts and podcast episodes about it. But you find yourself in the zone. You're fully connected, fully alive, fully focused. Time flies by, and you're often hitting what we call hyperfocus. And this state of flow is admittedly rare, but it's a key piece of sustained focus in an engaging task. So what does this mean for the classroom? If we think about engagement, I love the way that Philip Schlechte describes it as being fully attentive or fully focused, and then also being fully committed to the task at hand. So what we're really talking about is the highest level of student engagement. All right, so why does this matter? Let's think about it. Let's make the case for it. Well, this deep work allows people to fully engage with complex, cognitively demanding work without distractions. And this can lead to better problem solving, better creative thinking. I would argue better mental health as well. And I'm not a mental health expert, but there's some fascinating research around that. If you've read The Anxious Generation, you could kind of see where that might be coming from. But in a distracted age, this is more important than ever. I think some of it has to do with the world of AI that we're going to inhabit, that we're kind of currently inhabiting. If you think about it this way, I often in this podcast will talk about how the corporate ladder has become a maze, and our students will navigate this maze by solving sticky problems where the solution leads to another problem, which leads to another problem, and it's an ongoing process. Well, if they're going to navigate the maze of an uncertain world, they're going to need deep work. They're going to need focused, sustained work. And students will not develop that type of mindset of navigating the maze and those skills that they'll need to navigate this complex world without deep work. This type of deep work is a mindset that embraces focus over distraction and long-term goals over immediate gratification. It recognizes that learning is more about is about more than just speed and accuracy. It's often about resilience. Deep work is not just a skill, though. It's also a habit. There's this sense of discipline, for lack of a better term, in choosing focus on sustained deep work rather than being distracted by instant amusement. I can tell you just yesterday when I was working on that book, I had to fight off doom scrolling about the election. I had to force myself not to turn on Netflix while I was writing. That's a problem. So deep work is, I would argue, deeply countercultural. We inhabit a world of constant distractions and instant media, a TikTok generation, right? Where constant pinging from our devices beckons us from one urgent task to the next. And this sense of deep work has become both vital and challenging in a world of incessant distractions. If we want students to become deep thinkers, they need to engage in deep work. If we want them to become makers and philosophers and researchers, they need to have the mental endurance to stick with a task long term. Now, why is this important? We are facing a distraction epidemic. We live in a distracted world. While pundits often label this as generational, I don't think it is. I see this with my peers. I see this with my parents. But let's just focus for a moment on distraction and students. Well, there's a lot of studies showing that FOMO, fear of missing out, drives students to stay connected even during academic activities, creating persistent internal conflict between engaging with their studies and then going after their social impulses. Research indicates that students with higher levels of FOMO tend to engage in social media more frequently during class, driven by a fear of missing out on social updates. And this correlates with higher levels of distraction, lower levels of engagement, and in some cases, lower student achievement. Now that's correlational. It's not causation, right? We could know, for example, that students are getting distracted because they're so far behind or because they're not interested in the learning. That's a very real possibility. There is a relationship there, but here's where it gets interesting. There are some students who get past this. Students with higher levels of resilience tend to manage their FOMO by minimizing distractions and engaging in deep work. Resilience not only helps counter FOMO, but it also supports emotional regulation, reducing the likelihood of academic burnout and disengagement. This is what the research is showing us. But we know that this is an uphill battle. When I visit classrooms and talk to teachers, I'm struck by just how often they share the challenge of student distraction and lack of focus. The inability to concentrate is real. Now, when I've talked to university students about the distraction epidemic, many of them actually use that term epidemic. They see it as a problem. But they also describe the fear of missing out and the habitual nature of scrolling. Some of them have developed phenomenal strategies for maintaining concentration, but they've also described the sheer challenge of this experience. Someone described it to me this way. He said, "The thing is, I start eating breakfast, and the nearest thing is my phone. Then I'm scrolling and scrolling more. I don't think it's that bad, but social media is like the never-ending story. Except instead of Fantasia disappearing, it's your life. Or maybe your attention. I don't really know." I love that metaphor. It's like the never-ending story. The child of the 80s that I am finds that kind of a fun metaphor. Another student describes social media as this party where there's laughter in another room and you're sitting there getting work done, but it's hard not to think about the party, even if you're kind of into what you're doing. But here's the thing. I'm actually pretty hopeful. I don't necessarily believe in the kids these days hand-wringing that you see as people talk about this. Distracted learning has been an issue for decades. When I was a kid, we were channel surfing. That's us. We were the channel surfing generation. We might not have mindlessly scrolled through 30-second videos, but we certainly flipped through hundreds of cable channels without giving it much thought. When I taught middle school, my students had a hard time staying focused at first. Although we had a few class discussions and some direct instruction, our mix of PBL and design thinking meant students were struggling with long-term sustained work. Many students lacked creative endurance. They struggled to hit a state of flow in their work, so they spent the first week going to YouTube or checking their Instagram feed. But it didn't have to stay that way. One of the things I'll get into is how we can combat this. And I want to point out that it's easy to just blame the devices. Just take smartphones away and we'll be fine. And for the record, I'm all for cell phone bans in certain moments. Like I support it. I'm not one of those like, we should just give kids tech all the time. But I also think the issue isn't solely technology. It's more about passive consumption. It's what happens when you scroll through a feed without choosing to be present. It's what happens when you binge watch Netflix while you work. And it's not just the passivity. It's also the constant barrage of interruptions, the little red numbers that pop up on your phone and always open tab beckoning you to watch a cat video on your browser, or that colleague who keeps interrupting you. It's the fear of missing out beckoning you back to Snapchat. As educators, it can be frustrating when kids seem distracted or when they fail to have the endurance to stick with a long-term task. And yet, I'm actually hopeful. I've seen high school students get lost in a collective flow as they engage in mock trial prep. I've seen students who are doing a musical stay present in the moment as they prepare for the upcoming performance. I've seen students debate ideas in social studies class in a way where they are fully there in the moment. I've seen students move away from their devices as they pursue their curiosity during a science lab. I've watched students who supposedly can't stay focused past the 30-second time slot of a TikTok video get lost in a fictional world of silent reading. I've seen elementary kids who are the iPad generation hit a state of hyper-focus in an outdoor learning activity. Would you do me a favor? So that's what I'm planning to explore. In the upcoming weeks, we're going to talk about how we improve this sense of sustained focus. I'll be sharing insights into how we can design learning experiences that improve extended focus work. I'll be exploring research and talking to educators about what teacher-tested strategies they're using that actually work. And I'm going to share with you the 9 strategies that I'll be taking a deeper dive into as we focus on this idea of intense, sustained, focused work. So number 1, we're going to get into setting the tone for focus work. This is stripping the classroom of distractions, changing some of our classroom rituals, engaging in goal setting. We'll talk about creating mechanisms for slowing down. We often focus on speed and accuracy as the goal of education. And we're going to talk about how do we slow things down deliberately at times. We're going to focus on number 3, the idea of building up endurance incrementally. How do we start out small, build on it, create momentum, and eventually build up that endurance of focus? Number 4, we're going to focus on motivation. We're going to look at how do we tap into intrinsic motivation, but really we're going to look at self-determination theory and the idea of all of the ways that we incorporate motivational strategies in a way that will lead to deep work. Number 5, incorporate play-based learning. One of the counterintuitive things is that actually play-based practice, or I would say the idea of deliberate play, is as important as deliberate practice if we want to lead to deep work. So we're going to talk about that idea of how do we incorporate play-based learning. Number 6, the role of confusion. We often try not to make learning confusing, but actually learning can confusion can lead to deeper learning and a greater sense of focus over a sustained period of time. Number 7, we're going to talk about the idea of choosing single task tools when possible. That's going to get a little bit into the tech side of things. And as we move into a world of AI, how do we use AI for sustained productivity rather than just quick answers? Number 8, emphasizing productive struggle. How do we incorporate productive struggle in a world of instant answers, AI, and some of those things? We've talked a lot in this podcast about cognitive atrophy, and we're going to dive into what does it mean to avoid cognitive atrophy. And then number 9 is going to be this notion of not shying away from boredom. It's going to be the idea that boredom is actually a gift rather than a punishment, and that sometimes the learning just has to be boring. So those are the 9 key ideas. We might extend it. We might do more. I don't really know where this journey is going to take me, but I want to invite you to join me on this journey of cracking the concentration code. I would love to hear from you. Please send me emails at john@spencereducation.com. Oh, sorry, john@spencerauthor.com. Spencer Education is my blog. spencerauthor.com. Send me an email there. Let me know what strategies you're doing that's working. I want to hear more from you. I realize that there's no secret formula. I'm not trying to pretend that there is. I'm not going to share an instruction manual. This is going to focus on big ideas and principles, but also some practical protocols that you can modify for your own setting. Hey, thank you so much for listening to this podcast. Would you do me a favor? If you enjoy it, will you tell a friend about it? And would you also consider subscribing to this podcast and going to Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever it is you get your podcast and leave a review? Just click the little stars, however much you think this podcast is worth. That would be fantastic. And again, like I mentioned before, please check out my blog. Sign up for my newsletter. It is at spencereducation.com. Again, thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful day and go out and make something amazing.